Hey, Nick.
Hey, John.
Are you stoked to talk about the Montauk Project?
Sure.
Oh my God. Your mic.
Yeah?
It's upside down.
It's in the upside
It's in
down.
the it's
It's
yeah.
in the
It's
upside.
in the upside down. No, just flip it. Just flip it.
Sorry, hang on.
Yeah. Okay. And this is Stranger Still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
Podcast where we answer strange questions.
you never thought to ask.
I'm John Began.
And I'm Nick Wood. How are you? I realized the other day we haven't just like started a podcast talking about random crap in a long time, like a year. So
Yeah.
how are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. And you asked me that as a question. You said, you know? And yeah, I did know, so.
Oh, well. Reading my mind already, aren't you?
Reading your mind like some kind of psychic power?
Yeah. What are we talking about today, John?
We're going to talk about the Montauk Project.
And this is really exciting for many reasons. First of all, are you going to read my mind?
No, you go ahead. I'm going to just add ambience.
Are you going to make, okay.
Yeah, just keep talking.
You're worrying me. This is exciting because you brought this to me a long time ago. I can't.
No, go on.
Sorry. And Stranger Things. Stranger Things it came out like 2 weeks ago, but it's some people are still getting through it. I just finished it with my wife a few days ago, like Friday or something. And what do you think of season two? Just real fast,
Real
no
fast?
spoilers. What do you think of season two?
Okay. It was really good.
Everyone I've talked to is like, it's not as good as season one. I'm like, well, yeah, it's hard to beat season one, but at the same time.
The nostalgia doesn't match because I liked watching the first one for the first time and not knowing the characters.
No,
Shut up.
they did a really good job.
It was perfect.
Because it went into the human element. Like, what would these humans in a real life situation do after things have settled down? And then
The answer
things are
is,
sort of back to normal, and then crap hits the fan
yeah, get the high
again.
score in there on the arcade.
Well, also Dragon's Lair made a cameo appearance.
Really
Don
good.
Bluth in the house. As for all you cartoon buffs out there, go listen to my other podcast, Limited Cell. You can find it on iTunes. Oh, I want to say up top, I'm sorry for Limited Cell showing up in the iTunes feed for Stranger Still. I think I have it fixed.
Cool.
You might have to like unsubscribe and resubscribe again, but it should be fixed.
Okay.
Sorry.
Make sure to do the second part. Don't just unsubscribe. Also,
Also,
we never mentioned who helped us with our Halloween episode.
oh, I was going to save that for our Patreon. We'll save it for the very end. Without further ado, I think we should talk about the Montauk Project because I have a lot of notes to go through here. Because I've been seeing a lot of articles lately and videos, like even Maddie Rendulik tagged us in a video peddling the Montauk Project as the real life inspiration for Stranger Things. And that in and of itself piqued my interest. And you brought this to me, like, I don't even remember when. It had been when we first started recording. You were trying to get me to watch Stranger Things, and you're like, this is based on the Montauk Project, which is like in my hometown. So this has been on my mind for a long time, and now I'm seeing all these things about the Montauk Project come up. And before we get into what my perceptions were going into this, what did you think Montauk was?
So Montauk is a city
Yes.
on Long Island, out
Yeah.
east, where I
Yep.
would go and look at lighthouses and go boating with my ex-girlfriend and fight with her, and then she said, like,
I hope you get
I hope
abducted.
you get abducted. And then I had friends that lived out east too that would go out there, and the one story that they had told me that there were satellites and there were buildings that were in the middle of nowhere that would have just like a satellite spinning on top. And even to like to that day, like 10 years ago. So they were all surrounded by barbed wire, so they were at a party that was down the street, and they threw a mattress over the fence, and they climbed over the barbed wire with the mattress to try to get in, but all the doors were locked. But I think that one person did be like able to get in through a window, and there's just like equipment that they did not know what it did. It was like old computers and old stuff.
really old, like, mainframe computers and stuff.
But there's all these rumors, like the Montauk Monster.
That's even a recent one. There's the Montauk Monster.
That was solved. Yeah, that was a dog that drowned, I think.
It was a raccoon.
Okay.
So I was going to say this for the very end, but there's the legend of the Montauk Project, which has spawned many things, even recently, like the Montauk Monster, which, like, this weird creature washed up on the shore of Montauk, and no one could tell what it was. Apparently, some like people were at a party and they found a dead raccoon, so they gave it a Viking funeral because they thought that would be funny.
Yeah,
like because it was already dead and they're drunk, so they like, put it on a kid's floaty, lit it on fire, and then it washed up on Montauk and no one could tell what it was.
Yeah,
so that's what that was. Whether or not you believe that is a different story.
But it looked all shriveled and skinless and, like, dark. It looked like a Demogorgon.
Yeah, like a baby Demogorgon.
Yeah.
My understanding of the Montauk Project was that it was a place where the government or some body of people were doing experiments with psychics and mind control and time travel. They had kidnapped a few people, brought them into this abandoned airbase at Montauk, and then started experimenting on them.
Yep.
That was my understanding going in. And I knew that the government had experimented with all of these things before. We've talked about MKUltra on the show before.
Yeah.
One of our early episodes about the 10 conspiracy theories that are actually real. Mm-hmm. We covered MKUltra. There's also the Stargate Project. So I was like, hey, this could be a thing that the government did, and this is another interesting topic that we could cover. On top of that, the things like the Montauk Monster add to this legend, and as I started to read into the Montauk Project, there were claims that I hadn't seen elsewhere, like aliens and big monsters, not just like shriveled up burnt raccoons, hypnotic regression, Nazis. Mm-hmm. So then I started to put my skeptic hat on.
Yeah.
Which is never a good thing to do. It's okay. It's an okay thing to do if you have an open mind. I always have an open mind.
Well, that's what skepticism is. It's not closed-mindedism.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to believe X-Files. Okay. So I decided
You're two notes away from a $200 copyright suit.
Well, we could pay with it with our Patreon money, right?
Yeah. Patreon.com/StrangerStyle.
Thank you. So I decided to read the source of where this whole conspiracy theory came from. It's called The Montauk Project Experiments in Time. It's by Preston B. Nichols and Peter Moon from the perspective of Preston Nichols. And it's widely regarded as the beginning of the conspiracy theories. Came out in 1992. In the foreword of the book, Preston talks about how this is the truth as he knows it. He's not willingly telling any lies. This is as his memory can best serve the story.
He worked there?
Supposedly.
Okay.
And I'm going to give a summary of this book as best as I can, and I'm sorry if the narrative jumps around a bunch or doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So stop me if it doesn't make sense. If I explain something that I've never mentioned before, like transmitters or vortexes, stop me and ask what those are, because that's how this book goes.
Okay.
It's very hard to follow. So I've tried to put it in the most comprehensible timeline that I could.
Okay.
It all begins in the year of 1971, when Preston Nichols started working for a weapons contractor on Long Island, where Montauk is. He was an engineer working with like radio waves and satellites and stuff. He had a lab at his house where he had like this big satellite on top of his lab that he would do experiments with.
Mm-hmm. This is what year?
1971.
Okay. So let me also put a prerequisite that there is a big military presence on Long Island. They have one of the best training bases in the country called West Point.
Mm-hmm.
My grandpa said if I ever went there, he would buy me a Jaguar.
But wow.
No one in my family wanted to.
Oh.
But yeah, so I bet a lot of people that work there transferred.
Yeah, maybe. That might come up a little bit later. The reason, since this all began in 1971, he waited until 1992 to tell the story because he met up with a senator in the 80s who was going to do their own investigation in the government side of things, and the senator told him to lay low as to not rouse any suspicion while he did his own investigation. So that's why he waited so long.
Okay.
It's an easy out. Sorry, being skeptical. Eventually, this isn't back in 1971, eventually Nichols noticed this weird phenomenon all across Long Island, where for 20 minutes every day, all the psychics in the area would just have a brain jam and couldn't think clearly.
Okay.
I don't know how many psychics there are on Long Island.
He had all their phone numbers and they all texted him. I can't think.
Sorry, this was 1974. It's 3 years later, after he got the job at the weapons contractor.
Oh, so it must have been over the radio.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have a cell phone.
Yes.
They all wrote him letters.
Snail mail. So having some psychic friends, he was concerned. He was a concerned citizen, and he used his knowledge of radio and satellite to actually trace the signal to a place called Camp Hero, mm-hmm. or what we know as the Montauk Air Base. 10 years later, so we're about 1984, dog year of that date because it's going to come back into play, he found out that it was completely abandoned, so he took a trip there with some random psychic. I don't know if he names them. I don't have the name here. So they're in there doing some urban exploring. They separate, and Preston Nichols comes across a homeless man, and they start talking. He's just hanging out in the base, and he's like, hey, I used to work here until this huge cataclysmic event happened that caused everyone to leave abruptly. All this equipment's still here. You'll find documents all over the place because everyone just, like, bolted. And better yet, he identified Preston as his boss at Montauk. So this guy was an engineer, and Preston Nichols was his boss on the project they were working on.
Okay.
And this was strange because Nichols had no recollection of ever working at Montauk.
Oh. But he did have a recollection of everybody getting a brain jam at the same time.
Yeah, this was separate.
Okay.
This was, okay, we'll get to it because this is going to get real fun.
All right.
Stranger still, he kept running into people that recognized him that he'd never seen before. Like a guy showed up at his house, a guy named Duncan, where he'd go to like radio equipment swap meets and people just like know who he is and identify him as having worked at Montauk. The impressive thing is from their urban exploring, they had some like scans of official looking documents that they supposedly grabbed from Montauk in 1984. Mm. There's pictures. That means okay. It's real, right? So eventually, like I said, he meets this guy, the psychic named Duncan. They become friends. Meanwhile, weird things started to happen at work where Nichols worked. He would notice he had like scrapes and bruises that he didn't remember getting. He would also just like lose time and not be able to remember major parts of his day. And so naturally he started snooping around work, being all like James Bond. Not really. It's kind of like, there was this weird place where security guards were standing, so one day they weren't there, and I went in.
Yeah, Paul Blart.
He's got a Segway in 1984. He found out that, like, he got into these places that were heavily guarded, found out he had, like, a secret office, and eventually the powers that be, like, caught on to him and took his office away and, like, blocked all of his investigation.
Instagram followers?
Yeah. Poor guy. It was his last day of work. They turned off his Twitter for 11 minutes.
Ugh.
That's topical. So he knew that there were things that he couldn't remember, and he had to unlock these memories somehow. And this is where things get bonkers. You okay. ready? He considered hypnosis and regression to recover his memories, but those failed him. He wasn't able to do them. So he did what anyone would do. Anyone would be installing a Delta T antenna on top of the roof of their home lab, right?
Yeah.
And the more that he soldered this Delta T antenna, the more he remembered about his time at Montauk and all this lost time that he had.
His memories were in the radio waves.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's his claim. So finally he was done soldering it and he could remember everything.
Yeah. Even things other people did?
No. Oh. Just things that he remembered.
Just everything that he knew.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first of all, luckily the Delta T antenna seems to be just something he made up. And it's specifically designed to bend time. So he just had this thing, you know, soldering this time-bending antenna.
I got a headache. Let me put this time-bending antenna on.
So he says, and I quote, "All I could figure was that the Delta T antenna was storing up time flux waves, and I was connecting them together. The antenna was stressing time, and then in parentheses, bending it, and enough bend was created so that I was subconsciously in two timelines."
Okay.
So by soldering this together, he brought those two timelines together.
Oh, okay. He like folded it in half.
Yeah.
Like a map.
He folded space-time with a soldering iron. Just a quick note.
What brand was it? Because that is the best promo.
Black & Decker. It takes a lot of energy to bend space-time. Like, you can do it with gravity, but it takes like a black hole, yeah. for instance. You can do it with speed if you approach the speed of light.
Right.
But it takes a lot of energy to bend. Or?
A Black and Decker.
A Black and Decker. So, I find that hard to believe. I'm not calling him a liar. I just find it very hard to believe.
Okay, that's fair.
So anyway, now that these delta T waves were in place, he can now reconcile the two time tracks he had in his brain. And the reason that I give this background is because the rest of what I'm going to talk about is his memories of working at Montauk. And this man goes into detail on the history and operations of Montauk as well as he could remember with these memories. He just regressed.
Mm-hmm.
First, he goes into some other discoveries. Hold on to your butts, okay? Are you holding on to your butts?
Yes, Jeff Goldblum. Or was it Samuel?
Sam Goldblum?
No. So who said, hold on to your butts? Is it Samuel? Jurassic Park?
Yeah.
Okay. So it wasn't Jeff.
Sammy J. We just saw Thor 2.
Yeah?
Jeff Goldblum is so good. He's so Jeff Goldblum.
That's great.
It's great. So anyway, he talks about how... This is all the history leading up to the Montauk Project. He talks about how the CIA was able to control weather with orgone energy or orgasmic energy.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. They'd send an orgon energy device up in weather balloons to control the weather. They had to stop doing this because of the possible legal ramifications if someone found out they're controlling the weather.
Yeah, whether they like
makes
it or
sense.
Not.
Checks out, right? Also,
hold on, that was really good.
What?
Whether they liked it or not.
I'll get it.
You needed a clean one. So.
Also, luckily, you can't recover any of these devices because most people would find them after like they came down from the weather balloon.
Yeah.
And they would try to make them work and they couldn't get them to work, so they'd toss them out. Luckily, Preston Nichols got his hand on one and was able to get it to work again, but you won't be able to find any.
Yeah.
He talks about the Philadelphia experiment. Have you ever heard of that?
I think so.
I think Stuff You Should Know did an episode on it. I think...
Is that the boat?
Yeah, the boat. That supposedly traveled through time and space.
People got stuck on the deck.
Yeah. I believe it's the last podcast on the left did an episode about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go listen to that. It's a very good episode. If I got the podcast right. The Philadelphia experiment, just as a quick primer, because it's going to come up again. It's this boat back in the 40s that they were trying to figure out how to make it invisible to radar detection.
Mm-hmm.
So they were running all these experiments, and supposedly the electromagnets aboard the ship made it disappear from space and time and then show up later that day two states away.
Yeah, and when it showed back up, most were dead.
Yeah, most people were dead. A lot. Everyone that survived was insane, like they had just gone crazy.
Yeah,
and died shortly thereafter.
The imagery that stayed with me was that people reappeared like stuck in between objects.
Yeah.
Because it like appeared and sliced them in half.
Right.
So they have like half their body coming out of the deck and their feet would be in the underneath.
Yeah. So he came across some other scientists that was trying to figure out why the people on the Philadelphia experiment, their brains were so compromised. So he started studying metaphysics, and this guy figured out that if someone goes into a bottle dimension like this ship had, they go crazy because there's no sense of reality to cling on to. So they're trying to come up with a way to use computers to feed some reference point into this bottle dimension to give them a reference point so they don't go crazy. Following me so far?
Yeah, sure. So they're sending a message. They're going to send someone like, it's cool, just like hang out.
Yeah, they're like,
just give us like 2 hours. You're fine.
It's kind of like making a holodeck in Star Trek. They'd be like, I guess the idea was to make a fake reality that they'd be like, oh, this is real, so there's nothing to go crazy about.
Yeah, so it's just floating in space.
Yeah, and this kept them sane.
Okay.
They took this technology, realized that electromagnets could affect the way people think.
Mm-hmm.
They went to Congress saying, we might be able to change the way people think. Wouldn't that be great for you guys? Congress said no.
Yeah.
The book doesn't supply a reason as to why they said no. Just putting that out there.
So they were able to create fake realities for people that are traveling between dimensions.
Yes.
And my VR headsets don't have cameras on the front.
I mean, if you get the Steam ones, the
Oculus?
HP
Vive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They like the screen lights up blue if you get close to an object.
Oh, that's good.
That's nice, right?
Well.
Good point, though. Very good point.
Okay.
So... all of these experiments prior to this, the weather control, the guy studying for the Philadelphia experiment, were going through the CIA. And since Congress said no, the CIA had to drop all these and abandon it. But there are people that are working on it that were in too deep, so they didn't want to give up their research, right?
Yeah.
I understand that. So they go to the military, and they say, hey, we got this stuff that might alter the way people think. We need a place to experiment. Do you want to use this for weapon purposes? And they're like, yeah, use this abandoned base in Montauk. It was an old air base. You can set up shop there. This base also had a giant satellite on top, like you talked about.
Yeah.
That was previously used for defense systems. It had become now obsolete. No one was using the air base, so it's a perfect place. He points out that they planned on continuing with the research that Congress had denied, so they didn't have any funding. So he goes out of his way to say, like, I have no idea how I got their money, but I believe that they had come across $200 billion worth of stolen Nazi gold, stolen in the 40s, and used that to fund the project. And maybe Nazis were also involved in Montauk.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm sorry, did I say mm-hmm? I meant.
Again, none of this is backed up by anything. He literally just says, this is what I believe. So it's just some weird thing that he came up with.
Okay.
Not saying he's lying.
But we'll go over what is factual. Yes?
Yes.
Because there's definitely stuff that happened. This wasn't all just completely fabricated. It was probably stretched.
We'll get to it at the very end, because I got a lot to go here.
Okay.
We're going to wrap it up soon. But the project itself, the Montauk Project, started in 1971. Preston joined the project in 1973, so 2 years after it started. He was just a lowly engineer.
Just a poor little guy. Yeah. He was pressed for nickels. He was trying to count his pennies.
It's a pretty good joke. Experiments started by using this big satellite radar to broadcast certain frequencies. Then they'd sit a person in a chair in a room. Usually it was Duncan. It was some sort of psychic, but usually Duncan that we talked about before. They'd set him down in the secluded room, and they'd like open and close the door.
Yeah.
This is the imagery I get. There's like... So they would use that to expose the person to different amounts of the wave or the frequency, whatever they were broadcasting, to see how they reacted. Eventually, they could make people laugh or cry or sleep, whatever. Whatever you wanted, they could make a person doing it by changing these waves and frequencies. And that was the prime objective. That was just to see if they could get people to control people's minds. Apparently, somewhere between 425 and 450 megahertz of radio waves, they could open up a window into someone's mind. And since this is such specific information, mm-hmm. I'd love to see it replicated.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd like to get even more specific.
Yeah.
The windows they opened were also Black & Decker.
I don't think Black & Decker makes windows, but...
Anderson. It's the only window brand I know.
I don't know any.
Those are Anderson. They're good. They're okay. Good windows, yeah.
I'll take your word for it. So a lot of people were experimented on. They would tell soldiers in the area that they could get free R&R by going to this base. So they'd go there and get secretly experimented on. They just like broadcast these waves without them knowing. They also experimented on the people of Long Island and New Jersey, and the townsfolk in general around there. Did your parents live in the area in 1970s?
Yeah, but
are they normal?
They're pretty normal.
Okay.
It was far. Montauk's like 2 hour drive.
They said like upper New Jersey and stuff is where they're experimenting. So
they reached that far?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, then West Coast, my grandmother and grandpa grew up in Brooklyn.
Is she normal?
She's like Captain America. Yeah, I mean, she says, Jonathan, did you eat? You hungry? You need anything? What are you doing? You hungry? You want some grilled cheese? No, Grandma, I don't want any
grilled cheese.
No, I'm going to make you some grilled cheese. I'm good, Grandma, I'm fine. You want one or two?
So eventually they even ended up grabbing males between the ages of 9 and 18, most with blonde hair and blue eyes, and experimented on them by sending them to the year or into the somewhere within the millennia of 6080.
Okay.
I think he gives a specific date, like 6400 something, but for mysterious reasons, he has no idea what they were there for. Also provides no evidence. He's just like, I know that they grabbed Aryan boys between the ages of 9 and 18. And I think it's because they wanted them to read this inscription that was on a statue. Just my thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Also, I don't even know if they sent them to the future. I just feel like they did.
Yeah, probably.
Not saying he's lying. So after years of experimentation with these waves, they could accurately say this wave and this frequency will make this person feel like this. They had this all documented out, and they could reliably change someone's behavior. At some point, literally a chapter break later, no other context, they combine this technology with another mysterious technology that could read a person's thought, push it through a transmitter, and show it on a computer. His very reasonable explanation for this is they got help from an alien race called the Syrians.
Beep, beep.
Hey, Syrian.
Beep, beep. Yeah.
It did work.
Can you help me?
No. Go away, Siri. So since the computers could read a person's thoughts, they could sit a psychic down, have him think of a reality, and then put that through a transmitter to the computer and mm-hmm. beam that from the computer into the other reality for these people traveling into the other reality.
Okay.
Also,
was that Windows, what, 84?
84, yeah.
Still paperclips.
I see you're trying to open up a wormhole through space time. Yeah. Do you need help with that? Also, they need to open up wormholes through space and time. So eventually, they got... This is still an evolution. They got to the point with these transmitters where they could sit the psychic down, hook them up to the transmitters, have them concentrate on an object, visualize it somewhere on the base, and it would materialize there. So they could be like, I want a box full of apples.
Yeah.
And they'll just think really hard about it, say, I want it in front of the door at the West Wing, and it would pop up there. Which is great, except you can't create matter out of nothing. That's just the law of physics.
Yeah. But I would totally mess with that guy and be like, hey, don't think about pink underwear.
A pervy Japanese man like Master Roshi. No, this is still Duncan usually doing this.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's where the yo-yos came from. How else do you explain that technology?
Did I tell you?
No.
How yo-yos existed?
No.
There was a woman that I grew up, I was a lifeguard at a retirement community. My grandfather was the president of that community. There was a woman named Seal. For Lucille, and she was like 100 and something. She would come and she would just sit by the pool, and she told me that her husband, one day she just opened up and like just started talking to me.
Yeah,
and her husband helped build the hydrogen bomb. Uh-huh. And when he asked her what were they working on, because they were sworn to secrecy, he would say stringless yo-yos.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No,
hydrogen bomb string. Yeah. So they used this technology or this. I don't even know what you want to call it, this tech, I'm going to call it, to create new buildings on the base. This also explains how they would expand the base without the town folks noticing. There was no building materials or anything, but they'd get like more floors on their base, or a new building would pop up. That's all great, but their main objective was still mind control.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, what if you visualize going into someone's body and think some thoughts?
Whoa, this is a family podcast.
Turns out if they did that, those thoughts would be transplanted into the person, like Inception. With the psychic powers amplified, they could affect electronics, like dim some lights and stuff, mm-hmm. And also move things with their mind. Starting to sound familiar here at all? Now we're getting to it.
Okay.
Sorry it's taking us so long. They could also control masses of people eventually. They could herd animals like into the town or make people cause crime waves. The author then takes this moment to tell us when psychics did this, when they were hooked up to the transmitters and they went into these trances, they would go into an orgasmic trance. This also made it easy for the psychic to be controlled, so then they could reprogram their mind, and eventually, apparently this happened to Duncan a lot. I'm going to come back to that orgasmic trance.
Yeah.
And I think you know where I'm going with it.
I was just
going
to let it slide for now.
It's going to get goopy later. So anyway, this brings us to time travel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Naturally. They noticed several anomalies, like, all over the base, like... I don't know what the anomalies were, but they noticed them. And they realized that all these anomalies were just bends in space-time, naturally. So they did some more experiments and realized if they oscillated a certain frequency with white noise, they could manipulate space-time. So they developed this tech, hooked it up to a psychic, and if that psychic concentrated, usually Duncan again, if they concentrated on a time and a place, they could manipulate time around that object. For example, if they focused on a door and focus on a time outside that door's existence, the door would no longer be there. So, like, that door, this house was built in 1974. If I was concentrating on that door, and I thought of 1973, that door would no longer be there.
Yeah, and then there's, like, a giant tree, and you're like, oh, this is so annoying.
Cut that down again?
Yeah.
Or if they don't want to do that, they can make time vortexes to specific places in time. They could also send someone down into this vortex. So let's say we want to send someone to the future. We would say, I want to go to 2025. They would focus on 2025, maybe the Montauk base in 2025. They'd focus on it. Someone would jump in. But if they lost concentration, that person would be lost in the ether forever. So they start kidnapping homeless people and sending them down these tunnels instead.
But how do they know the homeless people are psychic?
No, they didn't have to be psychic. The psychic would make the vortex, oh, and okay. then the people would go into the vortex or the tunnel, whatever you want to call
it. Send them in. Okay.
They'd also send people in with recording equipment, have them play around with the past and future. Luckily, we'll never know what they did because all the tapes and stuff were behind
glass, and they had a lock on them. Right. We couldn't find the key.
All I was trying to say is he didn't have access to them. Okay. They were behind velvet ropes is what I was trying to say. So this is when things start to hit the fan. At some point, they discovered Duncan no longer needed to be hooked up to their technology for him to open up time portals. So on August 5th, 1983, they left their machines on all day and night. Just had him, I guess, concentrating on whatever. Nothing happened until the 12th. They opened up a time stream to the Philadelphia experiment with a time vortex coming full circle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Totally happened. I'm not saying he's lying.
It's interesting enough for us to read all of it, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to wrap this all up. Hopefully here pretty fast because I'll just save it. So they were really worried about time paradoxes because some of the people at this base also worked on the Philadelphia experiment. So they built this contingency plan with Duncan that if someone whispered the time is now, he would manifest a way to shut down all the equipment. So on August 12th, this finally happened. They decided to do this. Someone whispered the time is now. And his idea of shutting down the equipment was to, like I said before, with the box of apples, he manifested a beast somewhere between 9 and 30 feet tall by visualizing it somewhere on the base, and the beast started tearing into the equipment and eventually demolished an entire building.
Okay, yeah, that seemed like the easy route.
Yeah, and apparently like some sort of H.P. Lovecraft beast, no one could quite describe what this thing looked like. Conveniently
sure.
enough.
Yep.
So he just like went around aimlessly destroying people and things, and this proved to be quite dangerous, as you can imagine. So Preston Nichols and like his supervisors tried turning off the generators to stop the beast, but it wouldn't work. They needed to turn off the transmitter, taking the psychic's thoughts to the computer and turn those off. They tried it on the base, but that didn't work. They tried going to the power company and had the power turned off there. The power turned off and then came back on. A lot of this is sounding familiar, not to Stranger Things.
No.
I'm going to come back to this. So they tried a bunch of other things, and eventually Preston Nichols went to the transmitter and started, like, cutting all the circuits apart, and that finally got rid of the beast. And he later discovered that the link to the Philadelphia experiment had kept the transmitters powered, because it was, like, bouncing back and forth. And apparently our narrator, Preston Nichols, still has some of these transmitters. The book also has a picture of the beast that was summoned, and the building it destroyed.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have as good a Photoshop in 1992, so I don't think that he doctored these, but the beast is just like a black blob on the photo, so
right.
whatever. Anyway, the next day the base was closed. Everyone left in a hurry. He sort of wraps up things by saying what Montauk looks like today. It's a park. You can sneak in there. At the time of his writing, he said a lot of the gates and stuff were vandalized,
yeah.
so people could easily slip in. But supposedly people that did this were abducted by a mysterious force.
Sure.
Maybe people worked there. Maybe people didn't. And the end.
All right.
So, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, do you remember that 99% Invisible episode where they had to keep people away from the radiation for millions of years?
No, but you've told me about this.
Yeah.
So tell our audience about it.
So there's radiation that they're trying to get rid of, so they buried it deep, deep underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that language changes so much. Even like 2,000 years ago, if you read like the way people are speaking in the Bible and all that,
uh-huh.
totally different dialect. It's hard to understand sometimes. So in the future, we're probably going to evolve more. So how do you keep people? What's something that surpasses language? And that's urban legends.
Mm-hmm.
So they started making urban legends around this area and songs and all this stuff where they were going to keep people away from the radiation.
Yeah.
They even were going to genetically modify cats and make them glow whenever they're around radiation and then make songs about them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a cat glowing, you know, stay away. I think that's what happened here. There was government buildings that they wanted to keep dumb teenagers out, like my friends.
Yeah.
So they made this urban legend around it. Or the teenagers made their urban legend because they just felt like sneaking in and cutting fences.
So that's I guess kind of where I'm going with this too. At the very beginning of the book, like I said before, Preston Nichols says that all these events are true and how he remembers them happening. He also says that you don't have to believe him. If you read it as fiction or nonfiction, you're in for a fantastic story, which I disagree with. I think the story was not very good. It was poorly told. It was all over the place and not engaging at all. Like,
was that his way of getting out of guilt?
I guess
for lying?
So. Yeah. So this took me 2 weeks to read, and it was only 150 pages because it was so all over the place.
Okay.
It was just like impossible to read and not engaging in any way whatsoever.
You made it interesting.
I tried.
Yeah.
He states that he's selling it as nonfiction because, again, in his mind, he's not lying. And I'm sure that he believes this is all true.
Mm-hmm.
He's done several interviews. I pulled one up on YouTube. It was like an hour and a half long. He was talking to a podcast about the Montauk Project. Both of these guys have gone on many shows to talk about the Montauk Project. You can read the interviews. So I think they think that it's all true. And when you read, like, the short synopsis, is like I said at the beginning, the government was doing mind control experiments. Sounds reasonable, because that's stuff that they have done in the past.
Yeah.
But as soon as you scratch the surface...
it falls apart.
It, like, there's nothing holding this thing together, which is why I wanted to read this book and have this episode, because I feel like all of this is really easy to just, like, sit here and be like, oh, that's stupid. But at the same time, there are people out there that believe this, and I doubt that they've read this book.
Yeah.
So you're welcome.
Yeah. I also think that there's a level of it where the buildings are there.
Yeah.
So there has to be, you know...
something happened there, and I tried to find, like, a source of truth of another angle of, like, well, this is how we explain what he thought about this, and there's nothing out there on that.
Yeah. If there's going to be a sun that comes up in the sky and you live in Egypt, you're going to make it into a god because you don't understand it.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a building in Montauk in modern day, you're going to make up a story behind it because you don't understand it.
My last thing about the book is that he talks in, like, fake... I assume it's fake. I'm not an expert, but it sounds like fake techno babble that means nothing. And at the beginning of the book, again, he's like, I don't know all the newest terms for all this technology because I worked on this in the 70s, so I might be off a little bit. Again, it's a way out of saying, if someone's like, this sentence means nothing, he's like, well, I don't know what you would call it.
Okay.
So here's another quote from the book. I opened to a random page, and again, this is out of context, but it's like this all throughout the book, and I read another quote earlier. This is, it says, when the Tyratron fired, everything in the pulse-forming network is loaded into the carrier oscillator tube as 1,400-volt pulse, which rips apart the vacuum and results in a high, quote, relativistic gain through the usual zero-point activity.
Okay.
Anyone tell me what that means? Literally anyone. Please. I beg of you. So, where I think this came from is, as near as I can tell, rumors started to bubble up in form in the 80s, which inspired him to write about it in 1992, which took it from local legend to international conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And after having watched From Beyond,
yep,
and knowing that there was a movie about the Philadelphia experiment that came out in 1984, I can see very obvious places he got inspiration from.
Yep.
When he talks about going into an orgasmic trance and this weird beast that no one really knows what it is comes out of this thing, and they turn off all the power to this machine, but it still turns itself back on.
Yep.
All of this stuff happens in the movie that came out 8 years before this book did.
Yeah.
It's like a carbon copy of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yep.
And again, I'm not saying he's lying. I think he thinks it's true, but this is all fake. And I'm not even going to sugarcoat it like I have on some of the other ones where, like, maybe some aspects of this are true. Hypnotic regression is fake. So if he says that he recovered these memories, you can, with hypnotic regression, we need to do a whole episode on this.
Okay.
Because you can go into this hypnotic trance and someone can suggest a memory, or you can come up with a memory
and
from whole cloth.
Yeah.
And you feel like it's real because of the way that memories are created.
Yep.
When in reality, none of it's true. It was just, maybe it was a pop cultural influence. Maybe it was something from your subconscious that was, I don't know, you had a nightmare about this one, so then it became your full memory.
So maybe this is his version of that, combined with the fact that he wanted to make some money.
Yeah, and they've written several books after this, and other people wrote books about the Montauk Project, and all of them claimed to have written these after getting more memories back after this book came out. And it's all hogwash, which is why I only focused on the one book.
Yeah.
I hate to dog on this so much, but I think it's important to talk about. If you want to learn about like real government experiments that have evidence and declassified information, go read about MKUltra or the Stargate Project.
Yeah.
The Stargate Project is like 7 different things combined into one, so there's many things to explore with that that actually happened.
Yep.
Go do that.
Or the CIA acid tests.
Yeah. That being said, it makes a... So, he says that fiction or nonfiction, this is an entertaining story. No. Stranger Things is an entertaining story.
Yes.
This is... It, at a certain point, it stops being fun because you're like, sure, these are fun elements to a story, but people are taking this as truth, which takes all of the fun away from this entire situation.
Yeah.
Even if it's a thought experiment, people are out there like, man, the government like opened a portal in space-time and moved a naval ship 2 states over in the matter of an hour. It's no longer fun.
Yeah.
It's no longer an entertaining story.
But then it's hard to get through to those people to say like, hey, this real-life politician took money from gun manufacturers.
Yeah.
Like...
Well then, like even we even make
they won't believe that
we make a podcast episode about it, and we try to educate the people about it, and they are just like, man, these guys are so indoctrinated. We've been called that.
You've been called that.
We've been called that on the Flat Earth episode.
He did not hear me though.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, he didn't think that about me.
Well, thanks for throwing me under the bus. So it's like, it's so hard once this thing is out there to be like, no, actually read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Actually sit down and read this book and tell me that 100% this is true. It's not. And I'm sorry.
You really didn't like it, huh?
No. I'm very frustrated. I spent $10 on this ebook. 100% not worth it.
Yeah.
I've never like reviewed any book on the iTunes store.
Uh-huh.
I'm about to.
Yeah, and if you want to help Nick get that $10 back, we started a Patreon at patreon.com/strangerstill.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that after this break. Man, I got heated. I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. I like that.
So, John, where can people find us?
They can find us by going to review us on iTunes and leave a 5 stars and then say, oh, this is a podcast?
Yeah. If you want to find us on Facebook, that's where it's happening. You can find us on Twitter at Stranger Still, and our website is strangerstillshow.com. But if you want, there's a couple housekeeping things. First, I want to talk about our Patreon, then we're going to talk about the people that helped us with our Halloween special, and then we're going to talk about Facebook questions. So, yep. Real fast, tell people about our Patreon, John.
Patreon is a website where you can donate money to help support stuff like this sound of my voice.
Or my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who you like better.
Right.
Not trying to start
specify
a feud.
Put it in your notes. Say this is for John only.
Yeah.
And we're going to have gifts and stuff. We're going to have extra episodes the first couple of minutes before we record. Politics.
Mm-hmm.
All
warm-ups.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So... One thing that we talk about in our video is this helps improve our equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to sound better. We're going to
get behind paywalls,
yep,
be able to buy books.
That's the thing we never talked about that I want to talk about. There's a lot of good studies out there that are locked behind paywalls, which is great. These people need to be paid, but that also means that we can't bring that content to you.
Yeah.
So there's been plenty of episodes where I've had to be like, well, we're not covering that aspect of this topic.
Yeah.
Because I don't have $30 to spend every episode. So if you want to help improve not just the quality of our voice, but the quality of
facts,
go support us on Patreon. You'll mm-hmm. get some cool stuff.
Yep. We also have some stuff that we set up for higher donors. Nick will draw some things for his other podcast, Limited Cell.
Yeah.
And send that to you.
Yeah. It's a good time. And we'll love you for it. We'll give you a virtual kiss on the mouth.
Anyways, patreon.com/strangerstill.
Thank you. Second, we've got to thank some people for helping us out with our Halloween episode.
Yep.
In case you didn't know, that was all fake.
We
didn't get gunned down by a chainsaw man. Gunned down by a chainsaw
chained
man.
Chained down.
Chained down by a chainsaw man. our plan was to go actually like ghost hunting, not like this was a story. We were trying to tell a story with this episode. We were gonna like actually go take a haunted tour of a place and report on it.
Yeah.
Like no gimmicks or anything. And then that fell through because
they emailed back and said sorry.
Yeah,
our website wasn't updated.
Yeah, our website sucks. Sorry, you couldn't join our tour. So we did this instead, and I think it came out a lot more fun. And we got it together in like 5 days because of some really awesome friends.
Yeah.
Do you want to thank them?
Yeah, Malcolm Nygaard, who's from Comrade Radio Network. Justin Vignola works on that network too.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend Mia.
Yeah.
Got on there as well.
Phil Gonzalez helped us out. We were on his show, Deep in Bear Country. He was the tour guide with a great accent.
Yeah, he was in, yeah, just the best.
Uh-huh. I think that was it, wasn't it? So, thank you to those guys. Mm-hmm. I hope that they had fun. I know you did.
We might do an episode just talking about how we ran through cornfields and we went to different reverb, like we went to a garage to do certain parts and
went to a park.
Yep.
Yeah. That'll be on our Patreon probably. Right.
Yep.
And then lastly, I just got a couple, things from Facebook here. They're actually from Justin. Did you say he's from the Comrade Radio Network?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if he said that.
I don't know what he's working on now, but he's worked with them on stuff.
Yeah, I know he's got a few projects up his sleeve. We might get him on our show at some point, because he's a really cool guy. Him and Malcolm, we want to get him on our show.
Yep.
We missed our shot with Phil, because we would have talked about the Mandela effect, but...
No, we'll still get him on for something cool.
Yeah. So he asks, is Montauk beautiful because it's trapped in a more serene time? I said, yes.
Yeah.
What is that?
You don't remember?
No.
It's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, I've never seen that. Sorry.
What? That was my favorite movie growing up. I was a little emo boy.
Yeah, you were.
That's what he was talking to, dude.
And then he also, he said, follow-up question, if you live in Montauk, do you age normally? And I said, I'll let you answer that one.
Oh, well, actually... You turn into an old sea salt faced sailor no matter what. It's just you're that close to the ocean, the air whips the youth right off your face and strips you.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, you always usually get a fun story about how you lost your toe to a fish.
Oh.
Yeah, remember that time out in the open ocean? The sea will really toss you up.
It's usually how conversations start over a beer in Montauk.
Yeah, gotcha.
Lots of sailors.
And with that, I'm still Nick.
I'm still John.
This is Stranger Still.